The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome in, everybody. It's time for another week of Need to Know. I'm Kip Kiefer, and just back from the Sunshine State. I was trying to think of a clever description, but that's not very clever, but that's where I was down in Florida for the last 4 or 5 days. Had a couple of things going on down there in terms of some medical things that having to do with my vision, but the main reason I went was to enjoy the sun and the warmth of the spring break period, not to go down and revel and drink irresponsibly and hang around on the beach so much, but to take in some of the other things I enjoy in Florida so much, like live horse racing. Was able to attend racing at both Gulfstream and Tampa Bay Downs, but also spring training baseball is just awesome. And hopefully on Kiefer and Curry this week, I want to talk about some of the things that are happening with baseball because it's a whole new ball game. You're going to be amazed when the season starts, the rule changes and things that have been implemented. But all of those great activities and a day at the beach were the ingredients for a fantastic week down in Florida. But what I want to talk about and what you need to know today are some observations I made. We stayed primarily during our visit for a couple of days right at Fort Myers Beach. And I think a lot of you can recall back on September 28th, about 176 days ago, Hurricane Ian came barreling across the Caribbean, went around the bottom of Florida and headed up the Gulf on the west coast of Florida. Originally, the forecast was, people even as far north as the Panhandle were greatly concerned as this monster hurricane gained strength. And the Tampa area, which has not been hit by a major hurricane in a number of years, knock on woods, huge metropolitan area, of course, with Tampa and St. Pete and Clearwater. That was looked like the area where it was most likely to come ashore. But unfortunately for folks in the southwestern part of the state, it took a turn and actually the landfall area was in the Fort Myers area, primarily Fort Myers Beach, Estero Island, Sanibel Island. And folks, I got to tell you, I have seen a lot of things in my time. I was actually in Oklahoma City for a convention the very next day after the Oklahoma City bombing of the federal building. Went down and looked at the debris from that and It was so astounding to see what kind of havoc and death and destruction could be wrought by a human being. But I'm telling you, Mother Nature has the ability to do that. And what I saw, and again, we're talking about something that happened 6 months ago, 176 days ago today on Fort Myers Beach. The destruction is just, it's hard to even describe it. It's all that time later, and there's still just such massive damage and so much evidence of what happened there to this idyllic beach community, which had been not a terribly popular place for people to go for many years. The Naples Fort Myers area was kind of a hidden jewel in Florida. People would stop and as far as going down the Gulf Coast, people from Alabama especially, don't go any further than the Panhandle. It's always kind of a running joke I've had when somebody says, hey, we're going to the beach this weekend. And I say, hey, that's great. What beach? And they always look at me quizzically and say, Gulf Shores. Like, that's the only beach in Florida. So people from this part of the country really don't venture down into the South Florida area that much, on whether it be the Southeast or Southwest coast, the Atlantic or Gulf. But the secret was starting to be out in Naples and Fort Myers and some of those beach communities, Siesta Keys, another beach near Sarasota that's absolutely fantastic if you're looking to change up your vacation habits. But Fort Myers Beach was becoming fully developed. In fact, the new Margaritaville resorts that Jimmy Buffett's cohorts and he are building, which are like full-scale communities and entertainment and retail and all kinds of, they're kind of like cities within a city, that was under construction when Hurricane Ian came to call unexpectedly. And here's the real sad thing about how all that unfolded. People in Florida accept, just like people in California accept, there's going to be earthquakes. People in our part of the country know that we've got to be on alert all the time for tornadoes. But hurricanes are certainly a reality if you live in Florida, particularly on the coast. But this was, again, the forecast model had this storm going considerably north of where they were. And basically where it turned was totally unexpected. And they had basically only had 24 hours once it became apparent that that was going to be ground zero for this storm. And this was a Category 5. It was building in intensity all the time. It had sustained winds when it reached the shoreline of close to 170 miles an hour. I mean, just imagine that. I mean, you walk out on a windy day here or anywhere you live, and it's blowing in gusts up to 35 or 40 miles an hour, and you feel like it's going to, you know, knock you over. Imagine strength 5, 6, 7 times that. It's really astounding. So the people didn't have a whole lot of time to get organized or get out or to board up. It was a frenzy of activity. And still, you know, a lot of them had been through storms before and chose to ride it out. And it was a bad decision, as it turns out, of course, a disastrous, deadly decision for a lot of folks there. But when this thing hit with the intensity that it hit, and I guess I've always heard the term, and I'm sure a lot of you are in the same boat as I am, from the standpoint of what terminology we just commonly hear, but never really think about the implications of. With 165 or 70, 170 mile an hour winds, that's going to do catastrophic damage. But we always hear the term storm surge. And the storm surge for this storm was so intense that a 17 or 18 foot wall of water, which is the storm surge, it's basically, if you picture yourself standing maybe knee high out in the ocean and a big wave comes and it kind of slams you hard enough where it almost knocks you over, you know, it'll come up, you know, even up to your chest and your chin. You know, those kind of bigger waves that come rolling in. All right, picture a wave that's 17 feet high, a wall of water that gets sucked to land by this tremendous, powerful storm and just completely, like a bomb, just hits all the buildings and all the structures. I mean, there are stop signs still bent over backwards, laying on the ground, still in the ground, but completely twisted down metal, just laying flat. But the real thing that was amazing about this is with the powerful wind blowing, it had did so much damage to roofs, it just ripped them right off, while the water just pounded all the beachside structures and even all the structures across the street, all the building on both sides of the beach boulevard. I mean, those properties across the street weren't beachfront, but they were pretty damn close. All you had to do was walk across the street and you could be on the beach. So those buildings had terrible upper damage because of the wind and the velocity and the power of that 165 mile an hour wind. But the storm surge, this wall of water, comes blasting in and completely trashed the ground floors especially, but even up to the second floors on a lot of buildings. And the water damage was so intense that these areas are barely salvageable. All the bars, all the restaurants, all of the different retail businesses, all the beach shops, all those things that were, you know, ground level, just got clobbered by walls of water. And the water damage is so profound that they're still, the windows are boarded up. The buildings that are higher than a couple of floors, the upper floors are operational, including condos and some restaurants and some bars and things that had upper floors, because they did not take the water abuse that the lower floors on structures did. And a lot of condos, the place we stayed, my friend's wife's mother's place, which was a couple blocks from the beach, a nice little condo kind of on the back of her complex. She didn't get a lot of damage there because the building was built in recent years and sustained a lot of the wind damage. And the water, although it completely trashed the ground floors of her condo complex, she's up on the third floor. So her place was pretty much unscathed. And that's where we stayed the last couple of days last week. So anyway, the long and short of the story is what I witnessed when we rolled in, because this is what I would never have expected. And of course, last September, I was following the events and listening to what was happening and seeing reports from there. You know, all the weather people and even regular reporters now do the brave thing and stand out there in the conditions. And it's become kind of a cliche almost that these weather warriors are going to be out there telling you what's happening, you know, barely able to stand up, having to hold on to something and getting soaked and windblown. But, you know, I saw those images, but just like everything else, and this is kind of what made the biggest impression on me, how, you know, we hear all these headlines and sound bites and witness all of these things that happen, and a couple of days go on, and next thing you know, you were on to something else, and you just kind of, you don't forget, but you just kind of put that in the back of the stack and move on to the next thing. And that's kind of the world we live in now. It's all whatever today's headline or whatever today's soundbite is. And that's not the case when something like this happens, because I'm telling you, the thing that absolutely blew me away after 6 months, that is the utter destruction and the evidence of that destruction. I mentioned the buildings that have been affected, that all the windows are boarded up on the ground floors. The beach itself is completely cleaned up. It is absolutely perfect and beautiful. We spent a day sitting down right at the edge of the waves on this pristine white sand. It's as if nothing even happened there, but you walk a block inland and see 90% of the businesses and the condos and everything that was thriving. A lot of people, because Fort Myers Beach, again, was kind of not a luxury beachfront community. It just had a lot of regular folks that had owned their land or had their spots for decades. You had a lot of mobile homes, and you can imagine how they fared in this thing, trying to bear the brunt of that storm. But all of that is just cleared away, and some spectacular homes had terrible damage. Again, my friend's brother lived right across the street, had a fabulous home that they had put all of their resources into, and had all, of course, their family keepsakes and everything that was dear to them. Their house, unbelievably, had the top part completely blown off, and like a tornado does, carried about a block and a half away is where they found it, just dumped on a street, a couple of streets in from where they lived. And the base of their house, from the tremendous rush of water, basically just got blown and washed away. So by the time they got back 2 days later to inspect the damage, there was nothing to inspect. Their lot was empty. The pool they had built was still in evidence and just basically a blank lot. But here's the oddity of all that, just like we see in tornadoes. There was a house directly behind their house that had no damage basically whatsoever. I kept asking the question, How does straight line winds from a hurricane blow the top part of the house just completely off and not blow it straight back into the neighbor's house? Instead, it somehow lifts it up and carries it further away. That's the capacity. That's what a tornado normally does. So I'm not a meteorologist, but I'm looking at the phenomenon. There must have been so many spinoffs with that kind of wind velocity. I'm sure there was tornadoes that were coming out of all that and causing all this havoc as well, because there's really no other way to explain what I witnessed in his personal situation, his house just gone. Now, you may ask yourself the question, because now in the aftermath, of course, there's a lot of rebuild effort, although there's not enough laborers and not enough materials there. So it's painstakingly slow if you do decide to rebuild. In his particular case, he's made the decision that he's probably just going to go ahead, because the property the house sat on was so valuable and is now even enhanced in value. You would think in these kind of circumstances that, you know, probably people would be leery to rebuild, but it's just the opposite there. They were building a Margaritaville resort, and it was already started, that was pretty solidly constructed to in anticipation of these kind of things. And they just continued on with that. And the bottom line is, when Brett sells his lot, that's all he's got left, he's going to be able to get a tremendous profit for that, because that land now is really sought after. And as I mentioned, it was a pretty humble beachfront situation. A lot of smaller condos, single dwelling homes, mobile homes, they're all gone now. So what you're going to have, ironically, is this huge revival, because there's such an appetite for beachfront living and beachfront business that they're going to build this spectacular new high dollar, high level community now, where just kind of a normal USA city was before. So, you know, for people that are into profit and progress, this natural situation is something that's going to completely transform that community and make it, you know, arguably comparable to the other, you know, super mega resort type cities that are in Florida, because so much of what it was is just gone now. But I haven't got to what really struck me, and what I really want all of you to kind of picture, that as you drive down the Beach Boulevard, everything seemingly normal, you know, 5 miles before you get down to the Fort Myers Beach and Estero Island area. And then all of a sudden you start seeing these massive piles of rubble on just about every block from what's been already cleared away. There's still tons of damage to take care of. But 6 months later, there are literally piles 10, 12, 15 feet high, half a block wide, of just debris of what's left from now the salvage or the operation of just cleaning up. And there's all this fleet, and you see them all everywhere, of these disaster trucks, these federal government painted black semi-tractor trailers that just all day long, all they do is load up these piles and truck them out of there. There's probably, we saw as parking areas for as many as 50 or 60 of these trucks in each one. So I'm going to estimate there's 200 to 300 of these giant black semi-government trucks there that are clearing away debris. But here's the most amazing thing to me. There are so many boats. And picture these massive, beautiful, you know, some yachts, some of the big, fabulous sailboats, many, many just regular kind of crafts and sailboats, and there are literally boats just about everywhere, in parking lots, upside down boats that have been tossed around and like cut in half, that washed up on the shore. And they're trying to remove all those. But 6 months later, there are mangroves and these marsh areas in parts of the beach further down that kind of border both sides of the shoreline that were never developed. And there are, if you drive down and look into those trees and those marsh areas, there are hundreds and hundreds of boats that have washed up into there that nobody's even gotten to yet. There's not even a thought of people that own those crafts to even, you know, try and revive them, because they're just not, they're not salvageable. So what's happening is the insurance company is settling with a lot of these people and moving these boats to these giant grinders and literally just cutting the boats up into tiny pieces and stacking them along the side of the road within the big rubble piles. You know, imagine owning a spectacular boat and it just being tossed around like a toy and ripped to shreds. And now they're not even trying to fix them or salvage them. They're just grinding them up to get them out of, off the area. But it's astounding when you walk down the street and you look in a parking lot of a business that's, you know, basically totally destroyed. And there's a giant boat that at one point was, you know, docked in the bay on the other side of the ocean front. And it has washed right up on shore, and it's still sitting there and it's crushed like somebody, some giant stepped on it just in the parking lot. And I'm not talking about like little fishing boat, like little tiny leisure boats. I'm talking about, you know, things that look like, you know, big pontoon boats or big, even like, again, I'll use the word yachts. These are major boats that are just sitting there. They're part of the landscape now. So it was an astounding experience for me. And it's something that I think I'm going to take with me from the standpoint of, you know, following the news and what happens is one thing, but the aftermath of things and what all of these stories and headlines we follow, what they wrought to the people that are affected. I heard amazing stories. There was a kind of a dive bar there right on the ocean front called Tina's. That I think probably largely was in its day kind of a biker crowd and maybe some spring breakers, younger folks, you know, kind of really wanting to party and whoop it up, country music kind of, you know, place. Her place, and we actually talked to Tina herself. Her place was pretty much ruined, but to go on, she has now put a trailer in her parking lot and has happy hour every afternoon with somebody playing a guitar and singing. And a lot of people were gathering there. So we stopped in and had a beer and talked to a lot of folks and heard amazing stories about how people who couldn't get out of there in time survived. Of course, a lot of them didn't. I think the death toll there was over 100. I think 122 is the number I heard. But I mean, these people were talking about, you know, as the water started coming into their residences, there was no place to go. The storm was still in its absolute height. People were climbing up onto their highest piece of furniture because these are only one level places. They can't flee to the second floor. And the conditions outside were so rough, you couldn't go to your roof like you do in certain storms, other places when the water's coming up, because it was ongoing. So people were sleeping on top of their china cabinets, on top of their stoves, and just hoping against hope that the water level didn't rise to the roof. Because, you know, I heard so many people say, I don't know what we would have done. So, I mean, can you imagine experiencing that in a night where you're exhausted and you've been fighting all day to try to prepare for this thing? And now you're climbing up on your highest piece of furniture to try and just seek shelter and just try to hope against hope that you don't drown in your own abode. And there were so many stories like that. And it's amazing what happens when people are fighting to survive. But just the sheer power and what I observed this week, you know, will change my perception of that of Mother Nature. And because it was so pristine and so beautiful there, the sky was blue. There wasn't a cloud in the sky, a soft breeze all weekend. It was just like the most calm, serene place on earth. And to picture that absolute hell that these people endured was something that I'll never forget. And the fact that 6 months later, it's still in evidence, like it's some kind of disaster museum. And all the things I've described, I hope I've painted a decent picture, But get online and look at some. I'm sure there's lots of photos. We took a bunch. I'm going to try to post as many and talk about this with a lot of my friends, because this made an impression on me that I'm never going to forget. Just thinking about what those people went through and looking at the aftermath of what happened. A lot of their lives are ruined. A lot of them lost everything. I mean, think about losing all the keepsakes and all the things that are so important to you, the pictures of your family, the mementos from a life lived, and they're just gone. And it's just such a hard thing to even come to grips with. And my heart goes out so much to all the people that that went through that and the people we encountered this past week. And I feel a lot more in the know here on Need to Know from having witnessed just the power and understanding the awe-inspiring situation of what can happen. And I think it should give us all appreciation of every day that we have, because, I mean, you can't take things for granted in the world. I love the old line that I'm not sure who originally said it, but the quote is, "Men make plans, God laughs." And I really, that is registering so much in my head now after what I witnessed. But God bless all the people down on the west coast of Florida. I hope they can build their community back bigger and better than ever. But after 6 months, there is still a long, long way to go from that event back on September 28th of last year. That's what I was going to update you on. I thought everybody needed to know that the story and the headlines do not end just because the news cycle changes. There's a whole lot still going on, and it was made a huge impression on me, and I wanted to share that with you this week. Hey, we're going to be back later this week, too, with the next edition of Kiefer and Curry. It's been a great joyride so far, doing 4 or 5 shows with Tony. And I appreciate everybody that's out there that's listening here on Tony Curry Radio. We'll have a new edition coming up in the next day or so. So look forward to that. Hope you will join us. And I will be back at the same time next week with another edition of Need to Know. God bless all of you. And thanks for tuning in. I'm Kip Kiefer. We will see you soon.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.